TMZ TV.
I'm wearing down, folks, so you'll have to excuse me if I'm not the panting, joyous puppy that I usually am. I want to talk today about eons, the periods of time created by God on which He hangs a revelation of Himself. Eons are a framework without which we couldn't go through things. Hear the phrase, go through things. It would be impossible to go through things were it not for time. It would be impossible to experience things were it not for time. God existed at one time, apart from time. There is a specific period of time, that I'm speaking of today called the eons. The word eon appears 101 times. The noun eon appears 101 times in the Greek scriptures. And I believe the adjective related to it, aeonian, appears over 50 times. I don't know if the creation of these time periods called eons, I don't know if that was the creation of time itself. In other words, there was eternity, whatever that is. And then God created Christ, and then Christ created the eons. Now that I'm thinking about this, if Christ is the origin of the creation of God, Revelation 3:14, that is the first thing God ever created, I don't even think we can speak of one being coming out of a being coming out of God without time. So I will say that the creation of the eons are a specific period of time, called the aeonian times, through which God reveals Himself. The eons were created by Jesus Christ. Think of the eons as a scaffolding. Think of the eons as a matting of a painting, of a blank canvas, of some kind of structure that will allow God to reveal Himself through various processes that could only happen in time and space. I want you to think of time and space as two ends of the Velcro arrangement, and we're sandwiched in the middle. Time and space, they stick to each other, and we stick to time and space, thus the phrase, I'm stuck here. Yes, you actually are stuck here because you're stuck between the Velcro of time and space. We are caged animals. We are stuck. Thus, terms having to do with time like slogging through time, laboring through the day. I'm stuck in the waiting room. But I especially like the word slog. I mean, I especially like to hate it. Slogging through the aeonian times. It creates friction because we're surrounded by time and space, and time and space together creating the friction and the stickiness where we live. Seems like it's all going to catch fire one of these days. You know, in space, nothing can catch fire. You don't have air molecules. So you can fly through space at incredible speeds and not even feel it. No wind, no anything. So I would relate time to the wind. It's a thing that we struggle against, but that we learn things in. You can't go from being stupid to being smart, or from being an unbeliever to a believer without time and space. And so God, in his mercy, caused these to come into being for us. When we have learned the lesson of these dual frictions of time and space, we'll be eventually delivered from them. I'm not saying that, of course, in the eons to come, we still have time, but it's just loosened up. Yes, it's still time, although I do believe there will be a time when we come into timelessness, but for the time being, the time we're in now is very difficult. Time somehow for us is going to be loosened in the oncoming eons, and I think that has to do with having the mind of Christ. It's not that time will change, it's that we will conceive of it so much differently. We will think of it in happier terms. We won't be going through difficult things. Time will be a pleasure. It will be like a hot tub. The hot tub of future times. We will soak in, but not yet. But let's go to the creation of the Aeonian times. Hebrews chapter 1, by many portions and many modes of old, God speaking to the fathers and the prophets in the last of these days, speaks to us in a Son, capital S, whom he appoints enjoyer of the allotment of all, through whom he also makes the eons. Makes the eons. Have you heard of people who make cookies? Same thing here, except we're talking about eons instead of cookies. I don't know how Jesus Christ made this scaffolding that we call the Aeonian times, but they were made just as Adam was formed and made out of the soil. They came into existence. Maybe it made a noise. I like to think it made a noise like the snap of water freezing or something like that. Something vaporous and not very helpful became crystallized into the Aeonian times. And now there was a framework just bubbling with potential in which God would put beings that would stick to the Aeonian times, that would slog through the Aeonian times, and that would learn many important and necessary things during the Aeonian times. But we're getting a behind-the-scenes look in Hebrews chapter 1 of the actual creation of the eons. For those of you who don't know, there are 5 eons in the scriptures. For an exhaustive treatment of this, go to YouTube, where you are now. Type in Martin Zender, the eons. I gave a 2-part talk in Indianapolis 2 years ago on the topic of the eons. In fact, I will have my sister link those shows below. If you're new to this channel, if you've never heard of eons, this is a word along with its adjective that appears over 150 times in the Greek scriptures. It is a key to understanding what God is doing, why he was doing it, why he is doing it, and to understand that things have a beginning and they have an end. Things began and things will end, and they will end satisfactorily, because the scripture tells us that God will get glory for the eons of the eons. God has been working and building things during the first 3 eons. We're in eon number 3. There are 2 eons ahead. Just quickly, the first eon was when God created the heavens and the earth. That was an eon. But the earth became a chaos and vacant. Genesis 1:2. That disruption wrecked the first eon. In Genesis 1:2, we see the Spirit of God vibrating, bringing land out of the chaos, out of and light out of the darkness. This was the beginning of Eon 2. Adam was created in Eon number 2. That eon went on until the flood of Noah. The flood of Noah was the end of Eon 2. When Noah came out of the boat, he walked out into a new world and a new eon. Eon number 3, it's the same eon we're in now. Paul calls it in Galatians 1:4, the current wicked eon. Eon number 3, the worst eon there has ever been. And you're living in it. No wonder you're having a bad day. That's why you're living in a wicked eon. However, like the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, a lot of people look forward to Saturday and Sunday. When you're in school, you can't wait for Friday. That bell rings at 3 o'clock. You run out the door screaming, jump on the bus, it takes you home, and you don't have to go back to that damn place for 2 days, also known as the weekend. We are heading into the weekend of the Aeonian times, the two future eons. The next eon is the 1,000-year millennium run by Israel upon this same earth, but it will be regenerated. That is Eon 4, also called the Kingdom Eon. Jesus talked about it, referred to it as the eon to come. Mistranslations have robbed this word from you. That's why some of you have never heard of it. The King James has botched the Hebrew, the Greek word ion. Should be translated eon, sounds like it, means the same thing, an indistinct period of time. They have made this word eternal, they have turned it into world, they translated it age once in a while, which is pretty good, but they're not consistent, and the adjective, they've completely botched, they've made it, again, eternal, and forever and ever, and it's a complete botch job. This is why you've never heard of the eons. It's not my fault. So the eon after the 1,000 years will be the fifth eon. The fifth and final eon is called the new heavens and the new earth. God will dwell on the new heavens and new earth. There will no longer be any temple. The temple will be in the fourth eon, but not the fifth eon. God will dwell with humanity. Death will be segregated to the lake of fire, which is the second death. There will be no more people dying during the fifth eon. They will be dying during the fourth eon, during the kingdom eon, because they are going to be criminals cast into the valley of Gehenna, which will be outside of Jerusalem. And even the scriptures say that someone who lives to be 100 years old during that millennial kingdom will be considered but a youth. But people won't even be dying on the new earth in the fifth eon. And at the end of the eons, referred to as the consummation by Paul in 1 Corinthians 15:26, death will be abolished. Those who were in the second death are liberated, and God shall be all in all. 1 Corinthians 15:28. All this began when Jesus Christ created the eons, and I think it made a noise. Probably, I'd like to think it sounded like water crystallizing, or maybe Rice Krispies. Now, along this line, I want to go to Romans 11:36. Because here we see what happens during the eons. The eons were created as a framework, not only for us to slog through things and learn things and become educated and go through the processes of evil and good, understand contrast, understand God, but it's for God himself to reveal himself. And of course, he reveals himself through all these things we're going through. But listen to this. This is the greatest verse in the Bible. I call it the law of circularity. It's not technically that, but it's a nice handle that I use. Romans 11:36. I'm going to read the verse, then I'm going to show you the context, because the context helps define the verse. This is a great verse. I'm reading it out of the Concordant Literal New Testament. Out of him, through him, and for him is all. There's a little more to it, but that's what I want to focus on for now. Speaking of God, out of him, through him, and for him is all. This is the simplest way to understand the universe. I'm writing a book called The History of the Universe. I'm publishing it in serial form in my newsletter, ZWTF. If you go to my homepage, martinzender.com, Scroll down on the left side of the page, you will see ZWTF Archives. Click there and you'll see the history of the universe. I think the subtitle is The Answer to Everything, or something bold and audacious like that. But here's the simplest way, and I'm into simplicity, to understand what is happening. This knocks down everything. This is an encapsulation of anything you need to know, really. It's a crash course right here, Romans 11:36. All is out of God, through God, and into God. That is, everything came out of God. Everything. Nothing that exists has not come out of Him, including Jesus Christ. God created Christ. Christ created everything else. All is out of God. All is through God. That is, all things consist by God. All things happen because of God. You notice the common denominator here is God. All is out of God, all is through God, and all is into God. This covers the past, the present, and the future. You're following me, right? All is out of God, all is through God. Everything exists because of God, and all is into God. That is, everything that came out of God that now exists because of God will return to God. This verse tells us that. It's the Word of God. It's inspired. And the rest is details. Honestly, the rest is details. This is all you really need to know. Well, no, it's not all you need to know, but it's the most compact, far-reaching, both into the past and into the future, verse you will ever read. Some people, believe this or not, some people think that the all in this verse, seeing that out of Him, through Him, and into Him is all. Some people think that the all there doesn't mean all. They think that only some things are out of God, only some things exist because of God or through the will of God, and only some things will return to God. Christians are famous for this. Christians make the gigantic mistake of, they'll agree with the first part of this verse, all is out of God. Never got an argument from a Christian yet that all is out of God. But after that, it's like the runner who trains to run the 110 meter high hurdles. And they're training and they're stretching and they're doing their pre-race warm up. And they've trained for 4 years and they've dedicated their lives to this. And they come out of the starting blocks, boom, the gun fires, they get over the first hurdle, but they fall on the second hurdle. All that training, and they fall down, go boom. And it's very embarrassing. And of course, you see it in slow motion after the race, and you just avert your eye because, oh my God, they trained for this. They dreamed about it. Their parents sacrificed to get them here. I'm assuming throughout that this race is an Olympic race. It's a huge race. Oh, this is the Olympics. This is the big show. All eyes are upon you. You trip on the second hurdle. All you have to do is jump over the hurdles. You can't do that after practicing it for 4 years or longer. It's embarrassing. So Christians, they come out of the blocks. All is out of God. Yeah, that's the first hurdle. They clear the first hurdle. But then they get to the second hurdle. All is through God. That is, all exists because of God. Boom, flat on their faces. Because once God creates things, the things, according to them, are on their own. Everything's on its own. God starts the ball rolling. Everything's out of Him. Then He's got some distant errands to attend to. So He leaves us on our own, otherwise known as human free will. God doesn't interfere. God sets the principles in place, the physical laws, and then He takes off. And then things just are, everything's on autopilot, except for human beings. I mean, gravity's on autopilot. Friction is on autopilot. Centrifugal force is on autopilot. Electricity is on autopilot. Everything is on autopilot except human beings. Human beings, according to popular religion, are a unique creation. They're a blank slate, and they are They are all capital G gods. Every human being is a capital G god. Yes, yes, yes. So all is out of God, but all is through human beings. You decide everything. You decide where you get to spend eternity. There's no bigger decision than that. But that's a lie. People who say that have tripped on the second hurdle. Really embarrassing for them. And their parents sitting in the stands. That's my boy. That's my boy. Then they trip on the second hurdle and they go, I don't know who that kid is. Who? Did you see that kid trip on the second hurdle? No. Who? What? Yeah. Disassociate themselves. From. The third hurdle, they never even get to that. All is into God. Everything God creates, God returns to himself. They don't even get to that hurdle. They've already screwed up on the second hurdle, thinking that human beings are responsible for continuing what God began. So they're sure as hell not going to get to all returns to God. No, because get this, they think that most things return to Satan. That Satan has an eternal kingdom far away from God's kingdom, as far away as Newark, New Jersey is from Paris, France. Oh yes, very, very distant. Very distant, thousands of miles away. Satan's kingdom, it's too bad that all that came out of God doesn't return to God. But it does. And I'm going to prove to you that all means all. And I'll end with this. Verse 33. I'm going to lead up to verse 36. Oh, the depths of the riches and the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How inscrutable are his judgments and untraceable his ways. Here's the part. Watch this. For who knew the mind of the Lord? Or who became his advisor? Or who gives to him first and it will be repaid him, seeing that out of him, through him, and for him is all. The key phrase is seeing that. So that this is a logical statement here. Paul asks the ridiculous question. Who gives to him first and it will be repaid him? That is, who gives anything to God first and then God reacts to it and gives back? This is what Christians actually think, that they pay, they give God the gift. They give God all kinds of gifts, their faith, their belief, their church attendance. They give God all kinds of gifts. But who in their right minds would say that anyone can give to God something first? Who gives to God something first? Paul is using this as an argument to prove that the all that he's going to use in verse 36 is indeed all. The only way this all of verse 36 could not be everything is if there could, is if there was one thing that somebody gave to God first that he does not have. The crazy supposition here for the sake of argument is, did God get anything from anybody? Was there something God did not have that one of his creatures gave to him first? Is there something that the creature had that was not in the possession of God, that the creature gave to God? And God was like, oh, what's this? Oh, I've never seen this before. Thank you, creature. You introduced me to some new thing. If that is true, only then would all not be out of God. But Paul asks this, what should be a rhetorical question, who gives to God something first? Duh. Obviously that can't happen. And so here's where the seeing that. Who gave to God first? Who gave to him first? Seeing that out of him, through him, and for him is all. All means all. Because if it did, it includes every single thing that could not be given to God first from a human, which is everything. Is that convoluted? Is that plain, sort of, kind of? If there's one thing that a human could have given to God first, then all wouldn't mean all. But since there's nothing God could receive first from a human being, then the all of Romans 11:36 is definitely all. And if you doubt it, Paul asks this ridiculous rhetorical question. Is there anything that humans gave to God first? No? Then all is out of, through, and into God.